Good evening and welcome to From the Front Line. In studio with me here is Peter Hammond. I'm Lenora Hammond. And for the last few weeks, we've had a couple of interruptions, but what we've been looking at is who one can trust. We covered whether we asked the question, can we trust the government? We asked the question of, can you trust the media? And what we'd like to look at today is, can you trust textbooks? Can you trust education in general, but specifically, can you trust textbooks? Peter?
Well, my first history teacher, Mr. Rhys Davies in high school, said, beware the victor's version, think outside the box, don't accept the textbook's version. Wartime propaganda morphs into peacetime textbooks. And he said, if you regurgitate textbook, you have no idea the kind of people who produce these textbooks. They're normally government employees who have been given a mandate, and it's produced by committee. So he encouraged us, go to the library, find out primary source documents, get back to the case. And that he thought that school textbooks was the worst source. And it's interesting that Samuel Blumenfeld, a major educationist, wrote in his book Revolution via Education, that he's talking about behavioral psychology, and that there's a very disturbing series of high-level educationalists, such as John Dewey, who specifically had the goal of promoting socialist revolution through education. And this is documented by, for example, Samuel Blumenfeld in his books, including Revolution via Education. And he said there's a new world order goal, that there was a new kind of behavioral psychology developed in the experimental laboratories of William Wundt and the University of Leipzig, and following the experiments of Pavlov, that major American figures studied under Wundt, including James McKean Cattell and G. Stanley Hall, and then there's Charles Judd and James Earl Russell. They came back to America with a goal specifically to revolutionize American education, to promote socialist revolutionary goals, Marxist revolution. And most obvious of these, of Hall's education students, were James McKean Cattell and John Dewey. Now, we know of John Dewey in particular. John Dewey specifically, although he wasn't a politician, he had radical socialist theories, and he had the aim to revolutionize America through state-controlled education. And this is relevant for us because a lot of our textbooks are influenced by that. Mm. So the philosophy of the classroom in one generation inevitably becomes the philosophy of government in the next generation. And so really in 1894, that's a long time ago, Dewey became professor of philosophy and education at the University of Chicago. He created his famous laboratory school and basically saw the ideal classroom as a psychology lab and the students as like laboratory animals to influence. So they published textbooks and gold. For example, in 1899, Dewey published the book School and Society as a blueprint for socialist revolution through education. And if you're wondering why a lot of people today are running around in the streets, burning down, looting, going berserk, throwing rocks, voting insane policies and so on, well, look no further than the education system they've received. Mm. There have been people like the Frankfurt School of Cultural Marxism, the Gramsci strategy and so on, who are literally seeing and have had the goal of revolutionizing people through the schools, through the textbooks and the curriculum. And if that sounds far-fetched, just wonder how is it that in the last generation or so, we've seen such a dramatic change in morals, ideals, norms, so that you can get into trouble now for saying something as obvious as, well, there's only two genders, or marriage can only be between a man and a woman. And that can be screamed down as a hate speech. You can lose your job. You could be prosecuted. All sorts of things can happen in different countries. And that shows how revolution through education has actually been advanced.
Mm. So education really has become the battleground. And I think anybody who still thinks that education can be neutral has not looked into the subject or has no children.
It's true. And we've seen without, well, I think of how I grew up without any of the worries and concerns and pressures and temptations that our children have had to deal with, because I was brought up in a society where we weren't exposed to so many of the things. Even though I was brought up in a society at war, We weren't exposed to pornography. I didn't even know of the existence of homosexuality until I was about 20. I didn't know that there was such a thing out there. We didn't know of the existence of pornography. We, you know, drugs were somebody smoking dacha. I mean, I had no idea that people would take an injection and mainline something into themselves, into their veins. Those are things that I went through my whole high school without being aware of the existence of such things. We were protected to a large extent because I still had an old colonial type education where it was based on the old British public school system. And it was very classical education. Shakespeare and Jane Austen and Charles Dickens was George Orwell. These were the authors who we studied as separate books. And now you look at children at school who are required to study books like the Vampire series or this Harry Potter. And then you get English essays where they're required to conjure up spells and what animal would you like to shapeshift into and what kind of potent would you, you know, make up a spell to put on somebody. And then we've even heard in South Africa that up in Gauteng, education department had amongst different English essays that you were to plan a bank robbery and, you know, be sure to put in your getaway cars and what weapons you're going to use and so on. And do we really need more robbers and armed robberies in our society? So to think that they've moved from where you had to think critically how to be a person of integrity to now how you can be a witch, shapeshifter, do astral travel, put curses on people and rob banks.
Well, certainly, fortunately, our children are finished with their education now for the most part. But I know we were, as parents, grappling whether or not we could trust a public school or a private school or whether we needed to homeschool. And we didn't make any of those decisions lightly. But certainly the consideration of textbooks and the curriculum that we chose was very important. One of my favorite quotes from Michael Pearl is, "To teach biology in an environment that denies the author of life is like eating an egg while denying the chicken. To teach history apart from God is to praise the sculpture and deny the sculptor. To learn science and mathematics apart from the omnipotent God is to throw out the computer and do your computations with a roulette wheel." And that really, when you look at it like that, it makes immediate and instant sense, certainly to a Christian. So I think certainly as wise Christian parents, we need to understand that textbooks have an agenda and to not be naive about the fact that a textbook is just teaching you some kind of a factual piece of information on any subject. So how reliable really are the textbooks in the schools?
I don't think they're very reliable at all. And just take, for example, that so many textbooks speak about billions of years and take evolution as a given and will present things like, well, carbon dating has proven, where the scientific experts will say carbon dating doesn't prove anything because it's based on assumptions which are based on other assumptions. And in many cases, it's been proven to be false. They'd have, for example, carbon dating of rocks that had just been created on Mount St. Helens after a famous a volcano there in 1980-odd, and there was carbon dating putting them thousands of years old. No, absolutely brand new. And they even tested living mollusks and found them to be thousands of years old and things like this. And there's no end of scientific problems. And if you just have to take a tour of the Creation Museum and the Ark Encounter and subscribe to the Answers magazine and get the books from Answers in Genesis or Creation Science Research or hear Dr. Philip Stott and Dr. Angela Stott on Creation Science and go through their books to realize that there's an enormous amount of things that are being taught, not just in state textbooks, but in our Christian textbooks, which are patently false. And that there's a huge body of science and there are thousands of scientists with PhDs and higher who go against the old Earth, billions of years, Big Bang, all that sort of type of theory. And they say, no, there's a very strong scientific case for young Earth, the flood and so on. And when you look at all that, you think, well, if I can't trust the science, can I trust the history? Well, I know personally, having looked into history the most, that no, you can't trust the history, because for example, when I was going through some of the textbooks from some good Christian publishers, mind you, and I found myself pulling out my pen and changing dates, changing facts, changing things, crossing out some things. And while my older daughter didn't have a problem with that, our second daughter was a bit disturbed over, well, how can a textbook be wrong? And when she saw my corrections, one of her very astute questions was, well, how do you know that you're right? And that's a very important question. And I'd have to say, well, I was brought up in Rhodesia and I knew Ian Smith. And what this textbook's saying about this, plainly the person never was there and didn't understand. And I was in Rwanda and I understood what happened in Rwanda and I knew the sequences and I did the book and I interviewed many people to produce the book Holocaust in Rwanda. So there's some places like Sudan and so on that I know. And my father fought in the Second World War and he is in the North African desert. And my mother went through the aerial bombardments of cities in Germany in the Second World War. And I know people from the Moths and others who were in prison camps. And I know people who suffered in concentration camps in Eastern Europe. And we know the personal testimony of people from the Ukraine. And so with those insights, there's some aspects of history, like a jigsaw puzzle, where I know this piece and I know that piece and I know a little bit of this. I met a man who knew Mr. Rhodes and who travelled in 1890 in an original pioneer column up to Rhodesia. Of course, I was very young and he was very old at the time, but I knew people who fought in the Anglo-Boer War. I knew people who were in the concentration camps in the Anglo-Boer War, which was a long time ago. But again, they were old, I was young, but I knew people who fought in the First World War as well. And to have spoken to them, and when you find that people that you'd know and trust say one thing, and some textbook, which is probably produced by a committee, says another, by people who probably never even traveled to Africa or weren't involved in it. So I've, over the years, come to distrust a lot of the textbooks. And what was also very helpful to me was, as a young student at school in Rhodesia, I was encouraged by my teacher to go to the library, so I did. And I read books like A.J.P. Taylor. And this Cambridge Don's insights on the First and Second World War was very different from what a school textbook said. And when I've more recently read Freedom Betrayed by President Herbert Hoover, Secret History of America's Involvement in the First and Second World War, I found a lot of what they teach in textbooks has been proven false by impeccable sources, a well-documented 900-page book with massive their footnotes and bibliographies bigger than most books. Studying books like The Fearful Master, Hellstorm, The Secret War by Max Hastings, which, as one general said, this requires all books and films about the Second World War to be rewritten because these secret files, which was part of Enigma, GCHQ, all the decrypts, it was so ultra secret, they were sealed for 60 years after the war. Mm. And so, of course, originally historians had to write their history without a massive body of very important information, which was kept from them. And therefore, they only had what the censors allowed. Mm. Well, now you've got to go back and say, well, now we know that that's not true and that is a fact that was ignored and so on. So can you trust the school textbooks? In my experience, definitely not when it comes to history and definitely not when it comes to science. I presume that the maths is fairly safe, but even there you can get a whole lot of secularism that comes into some things where we would have a better perspective from Christian perspective maths. So, for example, one of our Christian textbooks on maths points out that the metric system is based upon how God's revealed society. You know, we've given 10 fingers, 10 toes, we pay a tithe, a tenth, that God gave 10 commandments, and that the metric system's written into the created order and how God revealed the world. And there's so many interesting aspects, such as God is not 1 plus 1 plus 1 equals 3. He's 1 times 1 times 1, which is equals 1, but it's at affinity. Mm-hmm. Understand the infiniteness of God. And having Christian concepts to understand numerics and to understand mathematics also helps. And you certainly can't understand economics without biblical law. And so I would say, no, secular humanist textbooks cannot be trusted. And if a Christian school is using textbooks that have been produced by secular humanists or based on what they learned through secular universities, it would be so tainted that it would be better to rewrite a lot of them. So there's a big market today for rewriting textbooks from a Christian perspective using as close to primary source documents as possible, because I get the impression 20th century has been the most deceptive century of all, the most indoctrinated century of all, and to free our minds from all this, what do we call it, thought control, is really important.
Yeah. Okay, but I think just considering our listeners tonight, I'm kind of guessing that we can put our listeners into one of two camps. The one camp is motivated to homeschool, has the opportunity to homeschool, and has the experience and the advice, and moves in circles where they can choose the correct sort of resources and books. Then there's the other camp, and these are Christian parents, and for whatever circumstantial reasons, they cannot homeschool. So what is a parent like that going to do? What sort of extra precautions can he or she take when he or she has no choice in terms of what the textbooks are being offered at the particular school that they're at? What can he or she do in that camp?
Well, quite right. Although it's obviously easier to protect your child from the indoctrination going on there, there's a lot that we can do to actually counteract the damage. And that's why, for example, the Biblical Worldview Summit was designed to specifically help anyone who's being exposed to the public education system to get to understand all areas of life from a biblical point of view. And there's a bit of a crash course in a one-week Biblical Worldview Summit where they get a biblical understanding of the world war of worldviews, get to understand where secular humanism comes from, where evolution comes from, existentialism and antinomianism, all these worldviews, see where it fits in with the Hollywood films and textbooks. And then they understand what's the biblical principles of economics, crime and punishment, government, and so on throughout history, and in a fun environment where they're interacting with other Christians, some of whom home educate, others of which are going to government schools. And it's really important, especially if one's child's going to a secular school, or especially if they're going into university. And so that's one thing. Now, there's some excellent books that have been produced, and the best would be David Noble's Understanding the Times. That is a textbook that covers the 10 big areas from a Marxist point of view, from a secular humanist point of view, from a New Age perspective, from the Islamic perspective, and from a biblical perspective. Yeah. So it's helping you to compare these are the different answers to these sets of problems and issues from these different, so you understand, that's coming from a New Age occultic position, this is coming from a Islamic position, this is the way Marxists would see it, this is how a normal secular humanist would, and this is what the Bible says. And so a person understands how to put things together. Now, for those who don't want that phenomenal doorstopper, Understand Times, there's a simplified, shorter compendium, which is called Battle for the Truth. The Battle for the Truth by David Noble is a great handbook on these big issues, which is a lot shorter, a lot more accessible. Then there's some other brilliant textbooks that have been produced. Truths, Lies, and Myths by Gary DeMar. God and Government by Gary DeMar. There's The Cultural War by David Noble and Pat Boone, by Ted Baer and Pat Boone, I should say. Really brilliant understanding, especially the film industry and so on from a biblical point of view. So there's some good resources. I've written Biblical Principles of Africa, which is also in English and French. We've written South Africa Renaissance or Reformation. And there's the Biblical Worldview Manual. We've also got our Biblical Worldview Summits DVD sets, audio and MP3 sets. So there are some good resources. And you can also go online to some excellent websites. And I would say your first go-to on anything to do with science is AIG, Answers in Genesis, Ken Ham. He's got a massive resource of top-class scientists who can answer any scientific question, biological, chemistry question, astrology, you name it. And they have done a phenomenal amount of work. And we've got bookshelves, library shelves of great resource they've produced and videos and so on. And it's well made and it's fun. It's entertaining, actually.
Yeah.
So if you don't have the freedom and the opportunity to home educate or to have a reliable Christian school, your next best is make sure you've got access to the books, the videos, and to be able to get onto those websites and get onto the mailing list of those, particularly where your interest is. But I'd say Answers in Genesis is phenomenally important. And then there are others that are dealing with specific areas in education, like history. That's probably our stronger point. So you go on reformationessay.org for a lot of my historical presentations at Reformation Societies, where we're tackling quite a lot of contemporary issues or historical issues from a biblical point of view.
Yeah. Christian Liberty Books is just in the process of bringing out and releasing a 28-minute video clip on home education. And I take note that one of the things our son-in-law Hunter points out is that if you are sending your children to a government school and even some of the Christian schools, you as a parent, not only do you have to supervise their homework, but now you need to undo so much of what they are being taught, and you have to explain to this poor child who says, yes, but my teacher says this, but you're saying that. And it's confusing for a child, because now they have, maybe they really like their teacher and they get on well at school, but the parents are saying something different. So it's a privilege to homeschool, because then you can present your child with a vast array of opinions and options and help them not just to learn the information, but how to discern and how to learn, not just what to learn, but how to learn. So what if you now are a homeschooling parent and you're fairly sorted out with your textbooks and you're pretty comfortable that you're covering all your bases. Now you take your children to a museum, and now your museum field trip, you look at some of those labels and those signs, and you just, you know, billions of years ago, and now your poor children are really confused again.
Well, yes. And so it's so important for our children to know that it doesn't really matter what you think. It doesn't matter really what I think. It doesn't really matter what they think or say. What really matters is what God says in the Bible. And so first and foremost, we've got to be sola scriptura. Scriptura is the ultimate authority. That's the gold standard. Everything is compared and evaluated in the light of Scripture. Scripture is a lamp to our feet, a light to our path. So obviously good Bible study, a good knowledge of God's word is critical. And we don't want to have an attitude of, oh, the Bible is one of the subjects we do. Mm. We tack on devotions, just like many Christian schools have secular textbooks, government textbooks and curriculum, but they have a nice chapel and they sing Shine Jesus Shine, and they have a good worship service at the beginning, and they might pray at the beginning of each classroom even, which is all good, but it's not enough. Yeah. Because the textbooks and the teachers are what is really molding their minds, and the assignments and the exams. And so it's so important to be sure that the textbooks are thoroughly Christian, biblical worldview, but the teachers, the fact that the teacher loves the Lord isn't good enough, because we've got to have our mind renewed by the word. Now, if that nice Christian teacher went through a secular humanist university, they need a certain amount of having their presuppositions dealt with, because so often in university we are indoctrinated, whether we know it or not, whether we recognize it or not. And I've had to, throughout my life, find so many things that I've got to rethink over. And one of the first disagreements we had was when you met me on the first day and you asked about abortion in South Africa. And I tried to justify the hard cases because they were legal. And I was not seeing the inconsistency at that stage. And so it's important for people to challenge you. Are you being consistent? Are you being... And on so many issues, as a new Christian, you've got to rethink everything at a certain point, and it might be too much to do it all at once. But yes, the museums. I must say, I'm a connoisseur of museums. I love museums. I go to museums all over the world. I've taken my children to all kinds of museums. And some museums are just absolutely superb. And I must say, I think some of the best museums in the world has got to be the Creation Museum in Kentucky of Answers in Genesis, which I've spent several days reading every single label and going throughout. That, I think you can learn more in 2 days in a Creation Museum than in a couple of years in the average classroom. Yeah. And I don't think that's in any danger of being an exaggeration. And the same with the Ark Encounter. I've spent several days examining that, and what a top-class museum. Going to the Reformation Museum, Luther House in Wittenberg, the Reformation Museum in Geneva near Saint-Pierre, where John Calvin ministered. These are phenomenally good museums. And we've got some great museums in South Africa too. But in many museums, you get the billions of years and you get the propaganda. And I've gone through the Imperial War Museum in London, for example. And along with the good things, I saw nonsense. and propaganda. And it's a mixed bag because, of course, there's different people involved in the museum. And this exhibit might have total integrity. Another museum might be a lot of thumb-sucking imagination. Just one thing that was intriguing is my father said to me that in the Second World War in the 8th Army in the North African desert, he said Field Marshal Montgomery had by the side of his bed a picture of Erwin Rommel, Field Marshal Erwin Rommel, head of the Africa Corps, which was his enemy. And that he had Erwin Rommel's picture on his desk by his bed everywhere he was in his tent throughout North Africa to remind himself of the gold standard when it came to mobile warfare, tank warfare, and so on. And that was his enemy, Erwin Rommel, the Desert Fox. My dad mentioned it to me, and it was sort of in the back of my mind. I thought, sounds a bit strange. Well, 2014, I go to the Imperial War Museum in London after finishing a major conference. And lo and behold, aside from the First World War 100th anniversary centenary exhibits, which dominate the first floor and the second floor, that is Second World War exhibits. And there was a recreation of Field Marshal Montgomery's tent with, on his side table, there's a picture of Erwin Rommel. And I thought, how interesting. My father said it to me. I don't know if I fully believed or didn't, but I just thought that's strange. But in the Imperial War Museum, they're confirming that fact. Well, that was interesting. But then, going through the Imperial War Museum, I noticed an exhibit on the British Secret Service. And they've got a whole lot there, and MI6 and MI5 and so on and so forth. And I couldn't help but notice as I went through it, this bears no relation to the Hollywood films or the 007 films. Because not one of the 007 films has dealt with the real enemies of the British realm that the British Secret Service has really had to deal with, such as the IRA, Irish Republican Army terrorists, or the KGB. In fact, in the 007 films, the KGB is often the ally because it's normally some capitalist who's involved, or even a journalist who's running the real threat to world peace. And the KGB and the MI6 are working together to try and protect the world from some crazed individual, which doesn't bear any resemblance to reality. So that they didn't even have any jihadists, even though they had to deal with jihadists and so on in how many different cases. There's not one 007 movie that's dealt with British MI6 dealing with a suicide bomber or a terrorist bomber, whether IRA or jihadist. And you get the impression these people are cowards. They're not wanting to deal with the real issues. So sometimes going to a museum helps you to see, oh, in fact, the films, which are meant to be so true, obviously aren't reflecting reality. But then you see other things there that they present something which just isn't true. And I must say that while you want to evaluate museums carefully, there's a lot you can learn them, but it's just like a movie. It's produced by people. You've got to go back. You've got to compare it with the original documents.
Because in the end, even the experts, they're not always right, and they're so-called experts. And what about films that purport to be based on a true story? I mean, how much of it is truth, and how do you as a listener or viewer, how can you wade through, but that's not possible, or this couldn't have happened? Or
now, movieguide.org has got a wonderful ministry. They missionaries to Hollywood, Ted Baer, outstanding person. And what they do is they evaluate the content, the worldview, the basic message of the film, and that's invaluable. Know before you go. And they've got a goal of cleaning the screen, encouraging Christian content. But they don't specifically deal with whether it's historically true. Mm. They don't have enough people to specifically have studied the history to look at that. So I have written a whole number of film reviews of films that purport to be, this is a true story, historical films or inspired by true events. And you can go on the frontlinemissionsa.org website and see quite a few of my film reviews where I've looked at what actually the history is versus what they said in the film. In many cases, you find they've completely and utterly distorted it, like To Kill a King, which is meant to be on Oliver Cromwell. And they're completely, it's a hatchet job. It's not even vaguely close. And there's terrible liberties taken. So I've started to summarize this way. This is a true story or inspired by true events means some of this might have happened. And the names and the places are probably true, but the facts have been completely distorted beyond recognition to villainize the victims and to victimize the villains and to invert reality. And honestly, that's the case in so many so-called true stories. And when you understand that many of these films are produced by somebody like Harvey Weinstein, who's a known pervert and rapist and sexual predator, and so many of the most respected Academy Award films have been produced by low-life sleazebuckets like Weinstein, and then you find the Me Too movement showed that a whole lot of these other producers, directors, and stars in Hollywood are the same. We shouldn't be surprised that out of such a polluted spring would come such a lot of dishonesty, which is contributing to the dumbing down of a society where people think, I know what happened. I saw this film that was based on a true story or inspired by real events. But in fact, it's more dishonest than anything else. There was this one film. Now, many Tom Cruise films are good, but the one on 4th of July, Born on the 4th of July, the main event, which is the most gut-wrenching, didn't happen. And this is so often what happens. They will put, even in the midst of a true event, a fictionalized phrase, term, incident, which is often the most gut-wrenching. Now, for example, we like the Patriot film. And yet, the incident, which is the most gut-wrenching in it, is completely ahistorical. This scene where the British forces, the Redcoats, put a whole village in a congregation in a church and burn a church down around them, including the beloved new wife of one of the key characters. And it's so disgusting, burning a church down with the people inside it screaming. But that event didn't happen. It's ahistoric. And it was put in to make you loathe and hate and detest the enemy, which Hollywood thinks you've got to totally demonize the enemy. They can't just be on the other side. You've got to hate them. But it's not true. And it's ahistoric. And Christians don't put Christians in churches and burn down. That's what communists do. That's what jihadists have done in the 20th century. But you can see the problem. If you allow Hollywood to teach you history and to paint your reality, you will come out with a very distorted perspective. And so and then just think of all the things they haven't made films on. There have been 1,200 concentration camps in the Gulag Archipelago in the Soviet Union where tens of millions of Christians ended their lives in slave labor, in Arctic hell. But has there been one film made on it? There's not one major Hollywood film made on what Alexander Solzhenitsyn and so many others document, or what Richard Wurmbrand documented. And so the suffering of Christians in Red China or in Sudan or in Mozambique, or Angola or Zimbabwe, these things don't get covered. And so many people think, well, if I haven't seen the big screen, it's not real. And so it's not just what they show you, but what they ignore. That's so important. So that's why we've got to be first and foremost book reading people.
Well, I think, we're primarily talking about textbooks, which would affect our children. And that's a massive responsibility to just ensure. It's not enough to just get your children the best equipment or the best clothes or the nicest, newest and latest toys or cell phones. It's so much more important to be completely on top of what they are being taught. And even if you can't control what they're being taught because for whatever reason your circumstances don't allow you to homeschool, the onus is on you to do your own homework and make sure you can help explain to your children what's going on. But beyond textbooks and beyond going to school, we as adults as well, we've had a long, busy day and we just want to be entertained. And I think if you think of the responsibility in the media, just in light of the recent US elections and everything that goes on around us, we are fed by the media. The media is telling us who won. The media is telling us who's right. The media is telling us who's wrong.
And how we to think about and how we to feel about.
Exactly. And we're being dictated to by Twitter and by Instagram and by Facebook now, far more so than what scripture teaches on these particular principles. So I think the minefield that we have to wade through now is more complicated than ever. You mentioned your own upbringing and where you didn't have to consider the horrors of this world at young, tender ages. Our children, our grandchildren are having to consider the evils of this world at a much younger age, and they're not mature enough and they're not really equipped enough to deal with those sorts of subjects. So what resources can we offer as a ministry? What resources can we recommend to parents who are facing this right now? And also for any individual out there who really just wants to be able to look at the world through the lens of Scripture.
Yes, so we became parents 29 years ago. And we've got a few decades experience in home education, and because education really starts the first year your child's born, really. And from my perspective, because I'm well traveled and I've been in 42 countries and I've ministered in 38 countries, I saw a real need to particularly focus on history. I saw history as the first battlefield. And Karl Marx said, the first battlefield is a rewriting of history. And so certainly textbooks have been a major target for Marxist revolutionaries who've got the goal of using our children as guinea pigs for their social engineering experiments and what they think is a school laboratory, and like our children are guinea pigs. Well, I saw the need to try and find real history to combat the fake history. And so I've written a number of textbooks with my own children first and foremost in mind, but with a view to helping other parents bring up their children. I wanted to give my children examples of excellence. The world gives us so much that is dodgy and distracting and plainly defiling. Mm. And so I've produced books like The Greatest Century of Missions, probably my favorite book, which is 19 biographies of the 19 greatest, most inspiring missionaries in the 19th century. Well illustrated, lots of pictures. We're in a very visual society, and stories, because I think children, all of us, learn best by stories. Memorable events, incidents, quotes, and so on, and great, interesting visuals. And the Greatest Century of Missions book, I revised completely and expanded, and in fact, it's been reprinted even by other Christians up in East Africa, another 10,000 copies. So we've got over 20,000 copies in print and out, and that's one of our bestsellers. Then did the Greatest Century of Reformation, which you've also expanded and updated, and that's gone far and wide too, with 16 great biographies on 16 most inspiring reformers of the 16th century. And then Victorious Christians Have Changed the World, 32 biographies, going from Perpetua through to Mary Slessor, interesting, fascinating characters from all walks of life, but where you basically get a walk through 20 centuries of church history by the stories of different very influential and inspiring characters, all victorious Christians who changed the world. And then sketches from South African history, which is now also translated Afrikaans and much expanded. And so all of these also come along with audios and videos and PowerPoints and visual, because I know we've got a very visual society. So these are some history books that I've produced, which I first of all designed to inspire my children, and then put it to writing, and then gave presentations at Reformation Society and Great Commission courses and Biblical Worldview Summits. And so these are battle-tested, tried, honed, polished, and I think, and they're designed with Q&As, and we can provide the exam questions also to parents who want, for these books, Greatest Century of Missions, Greatest Century of Reformation, particularly designed for home educators. And I think that's one thing we can help with. But if people go onto the Christian Liberty Books website, they'll see, first of all, the trailer, but soon this documentary that should be ready this week on home education, which is a 28-minute documentary giving an introduction from parents and students and people who've been involved in education, and different perspectives on different issues there as an introduction. But Christian Liberty Books, it's a ministry of ours that we started 25 years ago, and so we now have over 6,000 titles, if we have books and audiovisuals put together, available online that one can order by mail order. And some of them are ebooks, and there's a lot of great resources too. But I personally love the hard copy. So Christian Liberty Books is a great resource. And Christian Liberty Books is a local African distributor for Answers in Genesis, for example, and Way of the Master, Living Waters, and a whole lot of others, from Christian Liberty Press through Becker, and there's some brilliant, Bob Jones University, good textbooks. So anyone interested in home education or wanting to supplement the state education their children are getting, they'll find Christian Liberty Books a good resource here in South Africa. And if you're in another country, we can give you, put you in touch with who's the best contact in Northern Ireland or in Belarus or Australia, New Zealand or wherever, because we've got a fair network. And the books that I've written certainly would help. And for those who want the audiovisual, go on to reformationsa.org website. You'll find quite a mountain of good presentations. The Other educational resource that's particularly helpful is William Carey Bible Institute. WilliamCareyBI.com on the web. And that's got, it's not only tertiary education, you'll find supplementaries, because you can look under everything from history, church history, missions history, evangelism, discipleship, all the way through science, creation, all sorts of great resources. And we've got audios, lectures, videos, books, PDFs, exams, charts, maps. So that's a real treasure trove, and it's all completely free. Mm-hmm. We produced that specifically to help the persecuted church in restricted access areas. But during lockdown, we decided to just make it wide open to anyone.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, I think we can also strongly encourage families to send their children and their teenagers and young adults to our camps and our courses. Next one being run January...
The 4th to the 11th. So it's from Monday the 4th to Monday the 11th of January. So 4th to 11th of January 2021. Biblical Worldview Summits, if you go on the frontlinemissionsa.org website, you'll see under upcoming events link, and it'll give details about previous ones, maybe some videos of some previous camps, give you a bit of a feel for it to get your children excited about the idea of what's involved. And it's really stretching body, mind, and spirit. It's a full comprehensive program. Lots of interactive problem solving, team building, sports and physical activities, as, along with the mental and the debates and a variety of concerts and skills. And so our children have always found these camps the highlight of the year, quote unquote, and they've never missed any. So it's not something just to go to once either. Most of our people, there's quite a network of those who have been to it who just become friends for life afterwards and best friends forever. So these camps and courses are a fun way of being able to look at the issues and to understand I'm not alone. I'm not the only person on the planet who doesn't believe the New World Order thought police politically correct thing, but there's a lot of others who are family orientated, pro-life, pro-moral, and who believe in literal six-day creation and young earth and all of the rest. So Biblical Worldview Summit is definitely a good intro. And if one cannot reach the camp, you can at least get the audios and videos in box sets and be able to benefit from the curriculum. Not that that makes up for the practical PT, obstacle crossing, team building stuff, but at least a lot of the presentations are available in digital format.
Well, Scripture clearly teaches us in Colossians 2 verse 8 that we need to be aware lest anyone cheats us through philosophy and empty deceit, according to the tradition of men, according to the basic principles of the world, and not according to Christ. And I think one very simple thing that we can do, that each of us can do, is when the entire world, global media, is saying one thing, best thing you can do is turn around and look in the opposite direction, because that's probably where you'll find the truth.
Yes, so really encourage people to see Indomiso's new documentary, this 28-minute film.
And where can they find education. That?
How
can they
go on to christianlibertybooks.co.za or frontlinemissionsa.org. You'll see it on our video page. We've got a whole Vimeo page of videos there. So you'll find it under interviews, and it should be embedded soon in one of the banners on the christianlibertybooks.co.za website.
And remember that these podcasts also can be shared. You can click on the link and you can copy and paste it into WhatsApp. You can share these any of these podcasts with your friends if any of these subjects you think particularly would help and encourage somebody. So we need to stay on our knees, and we need to pray for our children that we would teach them to be able to be discerning. There's no way they can be an expert in absolutely every field, neither can the parents, but we can pray for wisdom and daily discernment as we navigate the different schools that our children might be at and as we navigate what textbooks to use. So thank you for joining us this week. We enjoy our time with you, and we wish you a good week, and we will talk to you again next week. Good night.
And God bless.